Howdy and welcome to the show. Cooper's Code focuses on legal issues and notable practitioners, distilling wisdom so we all achieve the best results for our clients. I'm Miles Cooper, and with today's guest, Robert Engelhardt of Cooper's, we will be discussing keeping one's client involved in the process, educated about what's coming, as well as putting oneself in one's client's shoes. If you're enjoying what we're doing here with Cooper's Code, please help us extend our reach by giving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and consider sharing an episode with a friend. Welcome back to the show, Robert.
Thank you for having me.
So today we're going to talk a little bit about making sure that one maintains one's humanity despite one being a lawyer, which I know for some people sounds potentially strange.
Talking technical terms with clients doesn't usually work. So always need to realize that this is their first time going through the process and need to explain it to them like it's their first time going through the process.
On the human element, when do you start trying to humanize your relationship with someone new that you're working with?
I'd say right from the get-go, first conversation that you have with them, first time you meet them, yeah, you focus on explaining to them what's going to happen, but also focus on what they're going through and their questions. I think that's probably the most important initial conversation you're ever going to have with them is that, tell me about what you are going through and tell me how that's feeling and what are the stressors for you so that I can make this easier. Because we do take a lot of the burden, we take that off of their shoulders and carry it ourselves. But at the same time, this is their case and this is their life and we can never forget that. So it's starting from the beginning and building that relationship happens by learning about them and having them talk and be heard.
Can you walk me through that I would describe it almost a piecemeal way, in terms of you are meeting with somebody for the first time. How do you open that conversation? And all because I ask too long questions and stage direct with my questions. There's different ways that lawyers approach things, and some lawyers approach it with a lot of talking, meaning, let me tell you all about myself and the process and everything else. And there are other lawyers who sit down and open it initially to this individual so that they can ask questions and have their biggest concerns and harms heard. Is there a way that you find more beneficial in terms of your initial interactions?
I was always told lawyers seem to forget that a great lawyer is a great listener. So I tend to lean towards the more side of opening the floor for the person who's actually going through everything, that's actually feeling everything that we need to listen to and understand. So I usually will start with this is new to you. So tell me what your biggest concerns are. What is causing you the most stress? What's scary? Tell me what scares you. And also tell me, we deal in personal injury, so tell me how you're feeling today and how have you felt in the past. So if I don't say anything, that's a good thing, I think, because you're really listening and learning so that you can understand who they are and where they're coming from so that we can then better represent them and know what their expectations are so that we can then garner our entire approach to the case to what's going to make them the happiest. Because not all clients want the best result. They just want a result. And I think by listening, you'll learn a lot of that.
You said something really interesting just there. And I think that one of the presumptions that a lot of lawyers make, and potentially younger lawyers, is that the reason a client is here at this office, a personal injury litigation firm office, is because they want monetary compensation, they want the most money, and they want me to be their advocate, their fighter. Have you found that when you ask a client, what do you want, that is always the answer?
Never. It varies across the board. Some say, I want every single penny possible. Others say, you know, I just want something. I want to be recognized for what's happened to me. For example, I had an older gentleman who, great guy, wonderful person. He was in his 80s. He had grandchildren, huge family. He was T-boned. Nothing happened to him. Nothing for his fault. He had a shoulder injury. And of course, the insurance company was nickel and diming him. And his whole goal was, get me what I can get, and I'm happy with whatever I can get. And I explained to him, you know, we can go through litigation. This is going to be take up some of your time. It's going to take time away from your family. You're going to go through these, you know, stress of deposition, the prep. I think he would have done great in all of that and would have been able to get more. But at the end of the day, he has a thick Irish accent. So kind of reminded me, just a happy-go-lucky guy. Everything's great. And he said in his thick accent, what you got me, I'm happy with. I can buy my grandchildren something, a nice little present, and I can move on and be happy. And what I thought was not what he deserved, in his view, he said, that's enough and that's fine. So listening to that and not dragging them through what they don't want to go through, I think is, you will only learn that if you actually listen and target, you know, you have a target audience and that's your client. So do what they want done.
And I think that's an important thing. We get into the mindset of, well, we can do more, get more if we push this closer to trial, if we push. And sometimes in the balance of relentlessness and wisdom, it's the wisdom for the client of that invasion in their life is not what they want.
Exactly. A lot of people are private people and you have to respect that. And they just want something. They don't need everything. And others, they want to push it to the max and that's what you do for them. But it's not a one size fits all. And going back to keeping them updated and telling them what the processes are, I think that all goes into the communication's key. And you always have to explain it to them in a way that they'll understand, so that they can then make informed decisions of what they think is best for them, because there's only one expert and that's the client. They know what they want and what they want to get out of this, and you have to listen to that.
As we talk about this a little bit more, we've talked about listening and the importance of listening. There is also the educational side. A client, an individual who has probably never been through this process before, is not going to be armed with the right information to make the best choices for themselves in terms of risk management, in terms of impact on life, unless they learn a little bit about the process. How do you go about providing that education so that they can be an educated consumer?
I lay everything out on the table for them to look at. And then, you know, our job is also to decipher it and tell them what we think is the best course of action. But if you do that only once in a blue moon, it's going to be a lot for them to digest. So little bite-size updates, tell them what's happening, tell them what's going on, tell them the next steps. Don't have to get into depth about these depositions going to be happening. This is what we're trying to improve. That's probably TMI, as opposed to, we are going to be taking these depositions. This is what we're doing. Here's how we are helping you move this case forward. So that also, it builds trust, so that the client will trust you for when you make the decisions about, this is what we suggest is the right course of action for you. Of course, based on what you have told us what you want. And only way that you can build that trust is by sharing information and telling it to them frequently and as much as they want to hear it.
By way of example and getting into some of the granularity of things, do you provide some context early in the process of, you know, this can be X amount of time if we resolve it in pre-litigation versus going all the way through trial? Do you talk about mediation early on in the process in terms of just laying out some groundwork of like preview of coming attractions? Don't need to know now, but here's some terms and we'll be coming back to these.
Yeah, it's like the previews before a movie is, you give them a little bit of info of where it's going to go, because I don't want to give them too much information. So it's just overload and they don't know up from down. So a little bit of preview, this is what happens. We can try to get this resolved pre-litigation, or we can go just file a lawsuit and go for the real, you know, get their attention early. But again, it's give them a big overview generally. And then when each step comes up in the process, deposition, mediation, you have a more in-depth, longer conversation, about an hour, plus, all depending on what's happening. Like for deposition prep, of course, it's going to be a couple hours at least so that they feel comfortable, because it's all about making them feel comfortable so that the best result for them can happen. And at the same time, also that they you build that trust, because it is a relationship that you need a lot of trust, because there are some hard decisions that's going to be need to be made. And if they trust you, when you give them the advice that's going to benefit them, they will tend to take your advice or ask questions about why. And then it can be an open conversation, but that is it.
Then I think gets into trust and discussions about risk, because one client is not another client in terms of their risk profile. And we've had clients who have taken what we might consider to be very good offers and told us to go roll the dice for trial. And we've had clients who have gone in the other direction. How do you start to learn the client's risk profile? Because that's part of what we're talking about, right? There's not one answer for all people. There is the answer that is appropriate for a particular client based on how much risk they're willing to tolerate.
Yeah, and that's keeping an open dialogue. You can learn that over time, but I always like to say you have to keep an open mind throughout this process, because there may be things that come up later that we don't know today. And if you want to roll the dice so much, at the, you know, odds may change throughout the case. So what they think is their risk tolerance early on may change over time. So it's a always learning, it's dynamic, things are always shifting. It's not the same at all stages. So that's why communicating, learning about them over a period of time, finding out what their risk tolerance is at different times, because life may change for them. They may have a new job in there. This case has now become more of a burden than I'm willing to take, so give me whatever you can. Or I want to focus on something else, so let's move on. Or, you know, things have changed. They, being the other side, has now made me angry, and I want to push this to the limit. So it's always changing. It's never the same.
I'm going to circle back to one comment that sometimes comes up in those early initial client interactions, potential client interactions, when you're asking what they want out of this. Do you ever hear, well, it's not about the money?
All the time.
When you hear it's about the principle or it's not about the money, what does that do for you as far as an attorney evaluating whether you want to take this case?
Digging deeper is my first reaction, because you have to have the conversation with them is that the civil arena is the sole form of compensation is money. That's all you can get by law. So it's, if they say it's not about the money, while there are aspects about a case that can create change for the better, more safety, change a product. If they are there to, it's not about the money, I want to make the other side hurt, and this is more of a vengeful action, that is a red flag. And if you can't bring them back, it may be the fact, at least for me personally, may say, well, while they did something wrong, I don't want to be that person who just litigates to make it hurt, make the other side hurt. So if that's what you're looking for, perhaps there's somebody else out there who is a better fit. So it's also about while you're there for the client, the person who's going through it, trying to help them, it's also you have to reflect on yourself to say, is this something that's a right fit that we're going to be able to build this relationship? And if it's not, then it's learning that earlier and then severing earlier is the better fit for one, better for the client, and two, better for you and the firm.
And that's, I think, a good point. When one is working with a potential new client, it is a two-way street in terms of the interview process, just like a job interview.
Absolutely.
And that's something that I think some attorneys sometimes are so focused on the potential exposure that you start overlooking, am I really going to enjoy the next 2 years working with this individual because their values don't necessarily align with mine?
Exactly. And it's you need to know that you're going to be able to be there for them 100%. And if there's a 95% you're there for them, then it might not be right for them. And it's not only focusing about, I don't want to deal with this for 3 or 4 years. It's more of a, I may have hesitation to do what you think is right for you. And at that point, if I have hesitation, I'm not doing my job because I need to be 100% and we need to be in sync. And like you said, it's a two-way street. You continually need to build on that relationship and keeping them updated and knowing what they want at all times.
Transitioning a little bit, we've talked about keeping the client educated, up to speed so that the client knows what's coming and feels comfortable and safe. How do you learn more about the client through the process? Beyond the initial interview, do you go to their house? Do you follow up with them? Do you know anyone who keeps a pair of shoes in their office as a tool to remind oneself to put oneself in somebody else's shoes?
I like the hint.
Yeah.
I was blessed with being able to learn underneath some folks who are very, very good, and they were very good at extracting information that was necessary to learn about those who have been horrifically injured. A lot of the times people don't want to talk about it. And it's almost like pulling teeth, but there was one great guy named John Feeder. He used to keep a pair of shoes in his office. He would always point to it whenever, this was pre-COVID, so he would always point to his shoes and say, I keep those shoes in my office so that I always remind myself to, you know, stand in the shoes of our clients, because everyone's going through they have a different story. They have different injuries. They have different life. There's no one size fits all. And as a reminder to always try to think like what they're going through, but again, you have to learn from them. And that is by more pictures, the better. Talking to family members, going to where they live. I've been to the hospital before while they're there, right after. So you get to see, hear, and feel what they're going through. Because let's face it, at a hospital or acute care facility, they are not happy places. So actually being there, if they want it, only if the client wants it, you get to learn a lot about what they're going through and the effect that it's having on their psyche. So you can never learn enough. And only way to do that is to really get involved in their life, get involved in what they're going through. Read the medical records, talk to the doctors, talk to the family members, because everyone has a different perspective. And those perspectives, one thing may click with you, and then all of a sudden you get what they're going through. You get what the client's going through, understand their pain. It may trigger something in your own life. You're like, oh yeah, that's how I felt. And that was not a good feeling. And that is what you're trying to do, is explain to a wide audience of, this is what they're going through, and certain facts may resonate differently with different people. So you can never have enough information.
I think one of the learnings for me was when I got injured myself, I happened to have a wrist fracture right at the same time that I was representing somebody with a wrist fracture. And you don't need to have the same injury as the person that you're representing, but any type of situation where you find yourself limited in your activities unexpectedly, or stuck in an institution like being with a family member in ICU, those are things where it helps to reflect and use those as a lens from which to build your client's story.
Relating to someone is good because it then makes you empathetic, and it's hard to express by words what someone's going through. And if there could be that connection, like your example of a fractured wrist, that like, oh yeah, I remember that now. Then you go back and you feel it. Everything that you went through, now you say, okay, this person is going through what I went through. And that was horrible. That was a very bad situation that I don't ever want to go through again. So then once you're able to do that, then the results of the case can change, so that you can then tell the story, because that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, I think of mine was my dominant hand. And so everything was then done from meal prep to wiping one's rear end. Everything feels foreign and strange and limited and slow. And I had not had a significant injury before that. And I feel that it really helped me understand our clients better, just in terms of the, and it was, I mean, it wasn't a major injury. It was relatively small, but it helped me understand things a lot better to go through that.
You bring up a good point too, as we, as plaintiff attorneys, we see a lot of hardship and misery because of what our clients are going through. So at some points it can be desensitized as just, I've seen this before. This is normal, quote unquote. So that, and also that's goes for the other side too, as they see it so much where it's, and they're desensitized, like they heal, they're fine, don't worry about it. So by knowing that, no, actually, I remember that, that was very different and they're very different. And we need to always be rooted in that, is that every plaintiff, every person, everybody who's been harmed, they are going through this for the first time, and that they deserve whatever they deserve to make themselves whole. And that is what the law provides, and it's wonderful. So knowing that and understanding that and making sure to always come back to, this is new for them, it's, I always have to keep that in mind.
And I think that that is something that in the press of all of the work that we do, because litigation can be all consuming, being present and reminding yourself that everyone is unique and every moment and every injury is unique, is, it can be a challenge because, oh, well, you know, it's a broken collarbone. I've handled X number of broken collarbones before. I can tell this story because I know it. And one may have had experience with prior broken collarbones. Each one's is unique.
Exactly. And each one affects someone else's life. Like if they had just had a child, broken collarbone, you can't pick up your child. So it's just, it's no one person is the same. And it's understanding that and keeping that on the mind and approaching it in the way that, how can I help them? And how can I help guide them through this and make this as painless as possible? And they're already going through so much.
Do you find that your client is always the best source of information about the challenges they're facing? Or do you find that it's their family members, their friends, their coworkers, who oftentimes are able to provide a wider lens into the magnitude of the impact on the person?
Everyone is different. So sometimes it could be them. Sometimes they're stoic and they want to come off as, I'm fine. How many times you hear that is, I'm fine. Most recently, an amputee said, I'm fine. I'm like, I don't understand how fine could be in your vocabulary, but it could be multiple sources. And I, like I said, it's always good to have those multiple sources because, you know, they may be, the client may be saying, I'm fine. And then the wife or husband or spouse says, no, I saw them trying to do something of simply picking up a 10-pound box. And it was a huge task for them and it was hard. So it's different perspectives are always the good approach.
Going back to that educational process, and I heard you talk about not wanting to flood them with too much information, but at the same time giving a preview of coming attractions. Do you provide any sort of tools, like we're going to be talking about a lot of stuff, don't expect you to remember it all, and we'll be revisiting it. So if you don't worry about taking notes, but if you find yourself having questions afterwards, text me, call me, because we want to make sure you know everything. Is that a tool that you use?
Absolutely. I give my cell phone to every client and say, call me or text me at any time. And it may drive some people in the family crazy, but you can get texts at 7 o'clock at night or so, and you want to respond because it's, you know, questions come up after conversations and you want to make sure that they are feeling that they are heard and that their concerns are being addressed. And I've seen it a lot where probably the number one reason of why clients leave lawyers is because of the lack of communication. And while sometimes it can be hard, you want to make sure that if they do have a concern, that it gets addressed, or that you let them know, I'm going to get to this very soon. I can't get to it now, but I will talk to you and help you through this, these questions that you have. And by making it easy for them, it's, they're going to have something that they're going to ask, and you got to make it easy for them to do so.
So that then kind of brings up another topic, which is the check-in process. Do you set expectations in terms of, I'm going to check in with you every 45 days, or I will check in with you when something significant happens, or don't call us, we'll call you? How do you approach maintaining contact with the client so that they don't wonder what's going on after months on end?
Learning that in the beginning, again, that goes probably back to the original conversation of how involved do you want to be? And different people want different things. So it's, I only want to be told when a big event happens. I want to be told every week about what's happening. I want to be told, tell me when we have a number, some say. And it just all goes back to what's their preference. And some of them just want to move on with their life and be updated once in a while.
Are there other things in terms of keeping your client educated so that they can make the right decisions for themselves, keeping yourself educated about your client, that you feel we should discuss here?
I think that a lot of the times some information may be not hidden, but not forthcoming with clients, because there might be something that they're embarrassed of or ashamed of. I'm thinking of a specific incident recently, and it was something that could have impacted the case very poorly if I did not know about it sooner rather than later. So it kind of goes back to the trust. You got to have them have trust in you so they can share, and they have to share some embarrassing stories so that you can then protect them, because we need to protect them at the same time of achieving a good result. So you need them to be able to share that, and only by being non-judgmental and open about it can they do so.
You raise an interesting point and a difficult issue, which is extracting that information that can be a risk if not discovered. In this incident that you're talking about, how was it that it came to light? How did you manage to find this so that it was a landmine that you could defuse as opposed to a bomb that went off in deposition?
So we always send out a new client form to where they're supposed to answer a lot of the questions that need to be answered so that, one, so we get to know, and two, so we can protect. And sometimes they are not forthcoming in that, but this one recently came up in a responding to discovery requests, written discovery. And usually there's certain sensitive topics on the form interrogatories that come up where I like to talk to my clients when we go over responses, just so I need some clarity on some of these things. And some certain sensitive topics, I always preface it with, I need to know this. I don't care. Or I do care because I need to know this to help you, but I'm not going to be judging you at all whether or not the response is one way or another. And if you tell me something differently that I then find out that is contradicts or opposite of what you told me now, we're going to have bigger issues, and I'm not going to be able to trust you or know that you're going to be able to help me in our corner later on. And that could be terms where it's just going to be, we aren't going to be able to come back from that. So tell me now so that I can then move forward, and then we can move forward and we can have a good relationship and maximize what you need to get in this case.
You are reminding me of a case from many, 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 many years ago. I was pre-lawyer, and I was tasked with doing some help gathering records from a client who had told us that he had been a Navy diver between 1962 and 1970. And so I was supposed to get the records, and he then explained, well, the work that I was doing was top secret, so the Navy probably doesn't have records of that. And finally, after digging and digging and digging, it turns out that he had done an 8-year stretch for armed robbery and was embarrassed and did not want that to come to light. And it didn't affect the case. He was quadriplegic. So it was information that we needed to diffuse, but it took a lot of effort to get it out of him.
Exactly. Sometimes it's hard and they don't want to share it. And you just need to let them know that you're there for them. And hopefully by knowing that, they will be more open and willing. And then the ones who keep hiding it, well, that's a red flag. And you say, I can't represent you because you are making this hard. And at the end of the day, I need to move on.
Anything else you think we should cover as we talk about this somewhat broad topic of educating clients and keeping ourselves educated on the human elements in terms of what they're going through?
I just have to say, don't ever forget that there's a human on the other side. And this isn't just numbers and medical records and all that. There's actually someone there. And that person is why we are here. And if you use that as your guiding light, you'll do great.
The person in personal injury.
Amen.
Well, as always, Robert, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening today. Please email us at podcast@coopers.law with questions, comments, feedback, and suggestions on how you handle the human element of keeping your clients educated and keeping informed about what they're going through. Like what you heard? Share us with a colleague and leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. To all of you doing justice out there, happy hunting.